Welcome to the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff, president of the Christian Research Institute. We're on the air because life and truth matter. On today's special encore presentation of the Bible Answer Man broadcast, Hank welcomes back best-selling author Robert Spencer to discuss the politically incorrect guide to Islam and the Crusades, as well as the complete Infidel's Guide to the Quran. Hank and Robert address the misconception that Muslims and Christians worship the same God and the vast differences between the Bible and the Quran. To connect with CRI, call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. And now, here's the host of the Bible Answer Man broadcast, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you very much, Randy. Islam is not a religion in the sanitized Western sense. Rather, it's an all-encompassing socio-political legal matrix that has bred a worldwide antagonism to anything but itself. There might be millions of peaceful and tolerant Muslims, but that hardly means that Islam is a peaceful and tolerant religion. To determine whether or not it is requires an open, objective look at Islam, and that's precisely what we're doing today, a special broadcast with the author of two books that we're featuring, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Islam and the Crusades, as well as The Complete Infidel's Guide to the Quran. Author Robert Spencer is the director of Jihad Watch, and he's the author of over 14 books on Islam. He has led seminars on Islam and jihad for the FBI, the Joint Terrorism Task Force, the United States Central Command, and other intelligence and military groups. No one on the planet knows more about this subject, in my estimation, than Robert Spencer, and we are just delighted to have you on the broadcast.
Great to be back. Thank you very much.
I want to ask you a question. Almost asking the question, Robert, seems blasphemous, but give me a comparison of Muhammad and Jesus. Obviously, the difference between them or the distance that separates them is the distance of infinity.
Yes, very much so. For one thing, Jesus taught, greater love has no man than this, that he lay down his life for his friends. And Muhammad taught that you have to wage war against unbelievers and to fight them. And so it's the absolute gulf between loving sacrifice and warfare and conquest. And love your enemies and turn the other cheek versus Muhammad is the apostle of Allah. Those who follow him are merciful to one another and ruthless to the unbelievers. And so we could go on and on. Muhammad taught that those who believe that Jesus is the Son of God are under the curse of Allah. And, of course, the New Testament says no one who does not have the Son has the Father. And so the parallels are stark between humility, charity, all-encompassing love versus hatred, violence, oppression, subjugation, and war.
Talk about the difference between the Muhammad of Mecca and the Muhammad of Medina, and even some of the atrocities that are unthinkable that he himself committed while being a warlord in Medina.
Muhammad started his career as a self-proclaimed prophet, and he would preach in his hometown of Mecca among the Arabs of Mecca, the Quraysh tribe, who were polytheists, and he made very few converts. For 12 years he was in Mecca, and he was simply a preacher of his religious ideas, and he only had a handful of people who gathered around him, including his wife and his future son-in-law, and it was a very small band. And so he taught tolerance at that time. From the sections of the Quran that come from that time are asking for tolerance, but it's important for non-Muslims nowadays to realize that he was not preaching tolerance in the sense that he was telling Muslims to tolerate unbelievers. He was in a position of weakness vis-a-vis the unbelievers in Mecca. And so he was preaching tolerance for the Muslims. That is, he was insisting that the Muslims should be granted tolerance by the Meccans. When he moved to Medina later, he became for the first time a political and military leader, as well as a religious leader. And he began to teach warfare against unbelievers and the subjugation of unbelievers. And this is where the violent passages of the Quran come from. And many people nowadays, because of this large-scale deception campaign that is being waged in the West, they Muslim spokesmen quote passages of the Quran that come from the Meccan period and are preaching tolerance. They neither explain the context of the tolerance being preached, nor do they note that the tolerant passages are actually superseded in Islamic theology by more violent ones that come from Medina. Because in the Quran it says, whenever we, that is Allah, whenever we abrogate or cause to be forgotten a passage, then we will replace it with one that is just as good or better. And that is something that means in Islamic theology, essentially, that if there is a contradiction in the Quran, then what is considered to have been revealed later chronologically supersedes or abrogates what came before. Unfortunately for non-Muslims, the violent passages of the Quran come chronologically later than the peaceful passages. And so they are the ones that Muslims believe carry over to the modern age, whereas the tolerant passages do not.
Talking to Robert Spencer again, the books, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Islam and the Crusades, as well as The Complete Infidel's Guide to the Quran, either one available for your support. Check it out on the web at equip.org. Our resource consultants as well, they're standing by. You can dial 888-7000 and the letters CRI. So many hanging on. I'm going to go right to phone calls. Doreen, Surrey, British Columbia, you're up first with Robert Spencer. Hi.
Hi. Did Islam start when Muhammad went in the cave and a spirit spoke to him? Because I'd like to know that all that happened at that time that he went in there.
Yes, that's what Muslims believe, that in the year 610, it's the traditional Islamic understanding is that in the year 610, Muhammad was praying. He was 40 years old, and he was praying in a cave on Mount Hira outside Mecca, and the angel Gabriel came and appeared to him, spoke to him, told him to recite, and he said he didn't know how to read, so he couldn't recite, and the angel insisted that he recite what he was going to recite would be the Quran, the recitation, and that is the idea that Muhammad received through Gabriel this perfect word of Allah. Now, the thing is that the earliest version of this story in the Islamic traditions does not identify the being that appeared to Muhammad as an angel at all, and does not identify this being as Gabriel. And it says that the angel, or whatever it was, actually terrified Muhammad to a tremendous degree and made him afraid so that he thought he was going to die, and insisted that he recite until he was so terrified he agreed to do it because he felt as if he had no other choice. Now, what's remarkable about this is that in the Bible, we always see when there are angels who appear to human beings, they say, "Be not afraid." They don't terrify the person half to death. And so the fact that this was a being that scared Muhammad and made him think he was either possessed by a demon or going crazy indicates, I believe, very strongly that this was not an angel at all, that this was nothing like the visitations of angels in the Bible, and that it's not just a very different spirit, but exactly the opposite spirit, because it's one of fear instead of one that counsels not to be afraid.
Next up, Glenn. He's in Ontario, California, listening on Sirius XM 131. Hi, Glenn. You're on with Robert Spencer.
Hi, Hank. Hi, Robert.
Hi.
Hank, I've heard that President Jefferson was influenced by the Quran, that he actually owned the Quran, and that in his writings of the Constitution, and he was influenced.
He did own a Quran. That's true. And the idea, however, that he was influenced by the Quran or by Islam is pure fiction. and it comes from the modern day imperative to try to make Americans think that Islam is a wonderful and benign thing that we should welcome into the United States without any hesitation or reservation. The fact is that the first war that the United States fought was the war against the Barbary pirates, and this was during the presidency of Jefferson. And the Barbary pirates were Muslim raiders from Tripoli, which is now in Libya. And they would go all around the Mediterranean area and raid the ships of the Americans and the British and anybody else that they could get hold of and take what was on there and kill the, many times kill the sailors and so on. They did this in accord with Islamic imperatives about waging war against unbelievers. And so Jefferson had a Quran so that he could understand what the ideology of the enemy was. He was trying to make sure that he adhered to the adage, which is as old as warfare, that you have to know your enemy. If you do not know your enemy, you can't defeat him. And so that was what it was all about. He was by no means some sort of an Islamophile or proto-multiculturalist. He was nothing of the kind. He was he actually spoke very strongly about how when he met with the Tripolitanian ambassador, that the ambassador had made it quite clear that they felt as if they had a divine responsibility to wage war against unbelievers and to seize their goods and so on, and that's why they were fighting against the United States. So Jefferson didn't think this was a positive, wonderful thing to the slightest degree, and it's deeply dishonest for modern-day historians to be claiming otherwise.
And I'm going to take your word on this as opposed to the word of President Barack Obama. I think you've got the right narrative on this. Let's go back to the phone lines, talk to Naomi in Sioux City, Iowa, listening on Bot Radio. Hi.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Doing well.
Good. My question is, I saw a speaker a few years ago who was promoting the theology that you don't have to leave Islam in order to follow Christ. And organizations such as Voice of the Martyrs and others that are teaching that following Christ means leaving your Islamic beliefs are just bringing persecution on themselves. And one example he gave is that Allah means God in Arabic, and thus teaching new Christians that they should pray to Jesus, to God, does not, like, that's one way that they are bringing persecution on themselves. They should just be praying to Allah and not create dissension in that way. I'm just curious what your response would be to him.
The response that I have to that is the principle of non-contradiction. Islam cannot be true if Christianity is true. And Christianity cannot be true if Islam is true. This is because they directly contradict one another, and reality cannot contradict itself. Reality is always consistent. And so the New Testament says anybody who doesn't have the Son doesn't have the Father. The New Testament has Jesus saying, I am the Son of God, in the Gospel of John 10:36. The Quran says that it is an insult. It says, far be it from Allah's transcendent majesty that he should have a son. And says, insists that unbelievers are those who say that Allah is the Messiah, the Son of Mary. That is, unbelievers are those who say Jesus is divine. Now, all the traditional and orthodox sects of Christianity, Catholic, Protestant, Orthodox, all of them have always taught that Jesus is divine, that Jesus is the Son of God, the second person of the Trinity. Those things cannot be true if Islam is true. They cannot be false. If if Islam is true, then the teachings of Christianity are false, and vice versa. So one cannot be a Muslim and a Christian at the same time. If one believes in Christianity, then one believes that Jesus Christ is the Savior of the world, who came to earth, the Son of God, in order to become man, and was perfect God, perfect man in one person, who died and rose from the dead and absolved us from our sins by taking them on himself in that manner. And Islam denies all of that. So if somebody is moving from Islam to Christianity to say you don't have to pray to Jesus, you should just pray to Allah, well, that's denying Christianity to start with, because the whole idea of Christianity is that Jesus is God in the flesh, who one may pray to and who accepted worship while he was on earth precisely because of his self-awareness of who he was and who he was intending for us to understand him to be. So the people who are saying that are doing a grave disservice. The reality is that one may believe Christianity is true, and then anybody who consistently, with intellectual consistency, believes that Christianity is true, necessarily believes that Islam is false and that Muhammad was a false prophet and that the whole thing is an invention. If one believes in Islam, then one believes that Christianity is false. And as a matter of fact, it's built into Islam, it's mainstream Islam, that Jesus was a Muslim prophet who taught Islam and did not teach that he was the Son of God, did not teach that he was the second person of the Trinity, and that these things were invented by the Christians who were rebelling against God to do so.
Dr. Robert Spencer is a man willing to stand for truth no matter what the cost, and this is indeed a great cost for him. He's the author of The Politically Incorrect Guide to Islam and the Crusades, as well as The Complete Infidel's Guide to the Quran. You can get either one of them for your gift. Check it out on the web at equip.org, and we'll be right back with more of Robert Spencer.
Is the Islamic State truly Islamic? What is driving ISIS, and how can they be stopped? Robert Spencer's book, The Complete Infidel's Guide to ISIS, contains everything the people of the free world should know about the Islamic State. To receive The Complete Infidel's Guide to ISIS or other books by Robert Spencer as our thank you for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. You can also write to CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28271. Or just visit equip.org. Equip.org. Hank will be back after this. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. Surrogacy today is an increasingly popular reproductive option for infertile couples, but could bringing a third person, another woman, into God's plan for human reproduction be a good thing? The article, When Baby Making Takes Three, You, Me, and She surveys and evaluates the practice. Other topics include unexplaining the Mormon priesthood ban on blacks, a Holy Spirit encounter with a Jehovah's Witness, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Anselm, in defense of greatest being theology, and much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI or subscribe online at equip.org. Bet your teachers never told you. Muhammad did not teach peace and tolerance, but led armies and ordered the assassination of his enemies. The Crusades were not acts of unprovoked aggression by Europe against the Islamic world, but a delayed response to centuries of Muslim aggression. And what is known today as the Islamic world was created by a series of brutal conquests of non-Muslim lands. That's why the Christian Research Institute has added to its apologist arsenal two timely and thoroughly researched books on Islam by Robert Spencer. To receive your copy of The Complete Infidel's Guide to the Quran or The Politically Incorrect Guide to Islam and the Crusades as our thanks for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, or visit equip.org. Equip.org. A deeper understanding of the Bible's principles and truths will improve the spiritual, moral, and ethical problems facing our nation. Yet the obstacle isn't that the Bible doesn't speak to our greatest needs or answer our deepest questions. It's that the average person lacks the time and tools to extract the answers. That's why Hank Hanegraaff wrote the complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition, revised and updated.
This expanded edition addresses over 210 of the top questions he's received as host of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Hank has taken the complex and made it simple and memorable. Receive the revised and updated Complete Bible Answer Book as our thank you for your gift by calling 888-7000-CRI. And make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. Or visit equip.org. That's equip.org. Because the challenges of a rapidly spreading radical Islam will confront us for years to come, remaining ignorant about Islam cannot be an option for thinking Christians. That's why CRI has added to its apologist arsenal two timely and provocative books on Islam by Robert Spencer. To receive your copy of The Complete Infidel's Guide to the Quran or The Politically Incorrect Guide to Islam and the Crusades as our thanks for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Equip.org. Let's return to your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
Thank you much, Randy. Over 500,000 copies in print already of the Complete Bible Answer Book, but if you love the old one, you'll really like the new one. It's larger, has 50 new entries, the Complete Bible Answer Book, Collector's Edition, revised, updated, available for those who join the monthly CRI support team. Be pleased to personalize a copy to you, a family member, or a friend. Today we're talking about two other books, and they are available for your gift to the ministry all this month, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Islam and the Crusades, as well as The Complete Infidel's Guide to the Quran, either one available for your gift. Check it out on the web at equip.org. As always, a resource consultant standing by, 888-7000, and the letters CRI, the author of The Politically Incorrect Guide to Islam and the Crusades, as well as The Complete Infidel's Guide to the Quran, Robert Spencer, on the broadcast for the entirety of the broadcast today. He's the director of Jihad Watch, and he's the author of 14 books on Islam. Probably not anyone that I know of, at least on the planet, knows more about this subject than Robert Spencer. And not only is he adept at speaking about Islam, but he is adept at contrasting Islam and Christianity. And Robert, that raises a point. I want to ask you what you make of so many Christian leaders who say that Muslims and Christians worship the same God. We hear this from Larisha Hawkins, who was a former professor at Wheaton, as well as, and I want to read this to you, the Catholic Catechism. This is the Catechism of the Catholic Church, and section 841 says the Church's relationship with Muslims. That's the heading. The plan of salvation also includes those who acknowledge the Creator. In the first place, amongst them are the Muslims. These profess to hold the faith of Abraham, and together with us, they adore the one merciful God, mankind's judge on the last day. Again, what do you make of those who think that the God of Islam is the same as the God of the historic Christian faith?
Hank, I think that it's an uninformed view. It's a view that people have only if they have not studied the issue. The Quran actually says in chapter 29, verse 46, it tells Muslims to say to the people of the book, that is the Jews and the Christians primarily, that our Allah and your Allah are the same. That is, that in other words, we worship the same God. So that's the Muslim view. But when a Christian is looking at the scriptures and then is looking at the teachings of Islam, there are many, many things that should make him doubt that. For one thing, the Quran says that it has Allah saying that he could have saved everyone, brought everyone to the truth, but instead he decided to fill hell with jinns, that is, these spirit beings, genies, and men. Now, that is absolutely the opposite spirit from the divinely inspired words that say God desires all men to be saved and come to the knowledge of the truth. You can't have God desiring all men to be saved and come to the knowledge of the truth and then also say, well, the same God is saying that he could have saved everybody, but instead he's going to fill hell with people. There's just no way. The scriptures consistently show that evil is a result of rebellion from God, from turning away from God, that evil comes into the world because of mankind's separation from God. Whereas in the Quran, in chapter 91, verse 7 and 8, says that God places in the human heart good and evil. And so there again, it's a completely contradictory idea. Of course, then there are the things that we've been discussing, that the Quran denies the divinity of Christ, denies the crucifixion, denies the resurrection, denies that he is the any part of God, or the denies the Trinity. And so these things, of course, also should be taken into account when one is considering whether Muslims and Christians worship the same God. But ultimately, I would like to note that people, I think, make too much of this, that even if it were true that Muslims and Christians worship the same God, one wonders, what is it exactly that makes people think that that is so important? Obviously, Islam is at tremendous odds with Christianity in many ways, and has this tremendous critique of Orthodox Christianity built into the Quran, as well as in Islamic tradition. And so if Christians then affirm, well, we worship the same God, does that mean that they have no responsibility to preach the gospel to Muslims? Does that mean that they think Muslims are all going to be saved regardless of their hostility to Christianity and the warfare against unbelievers and hatred of unbelievers that Islam inculcates? What exactly do they think that establishes? I've never really understood that. I think that the clear evidence, as I've outlined here just briefly, shows that it's not true that we worship the same God, and that far too much importance is attached to that proposition in the first place.
Let's go to the phone calls and talk to Mike in Missouri. He's listening on Bot Radio. You're on with Robert Spencer. Hi.
Hello, Mr. Spencer.
Hello.
First off, Mr. Hanegraaff, I'd like to say I appreciate your program.
Thank you.
I do it every day. Mr. Spencer, you mentioned earlier in Islamic countries, little or no penalty under law for those that commit honor killings. I'm curious as to if you could explain to us, do they take over countries, and give me specifics on those countries, how they go about this, and do we have to worry about our constitutional law protecting them, in the future for honor killings? Send up a lot of red flags there.
Sure, and it ought to, because it's a very real concern. As Islam advances and Muslim presence becomes much larger in the West, we're going to be grappling with this kind of thing. And yes, it's a matter of public record. It's in the legal codes of many countries in the world. Just pulling up some examples here that I can give you. The Palestinian Authority gives pardons or suspended sentences for honor murders. Iraqi women actually protested a few years back, and they asked for tougher sentences for Islamic honor murderers because they get off so lightly now. In 2009, Syria scrapped a law limiting the length of sentences for honor killings, but the new law still says that if a man can prove that he killed for honor, then he just gets 2 years. That's all. He doesn't serve like life in prison or something like that. And back in 2003, the Jordanian parliament actually rejected on Islamic grounds a provision that was designed to stiffen penalties for honor killing. And so This is something that we see all around the Islamic world, and as I explained before, it's because Islamic law actually has no penalty for a parent who kills a child. In chapter 18 of the Quran, there's a very mysterious sort of parable in which a figure who is known in Islamic tradition as Khidr, or Green, he is taking Moses around and doing these various strange things, and one of the things he does is kill a young man, and Moses is horrified and asks him why he killed him, and the mysterious Khidr says, I did it because he was going to grow up to be unrighteous, and his parents are very pious, and they deserved a better child. And so that precedent is given right there, that if you have an unrighteous child, you can kill the child, and this is unfortunately all too common in the Islamic world.
Another Missouri caller, John, he's listening on KLTE. You're on with Robert Spencer. Hi.
Hank, Robert, very exciting program. We talked a lot about the differences of Islam and Christianity, and I believe that's all true. But one of the things we've never talked about is, because we have rampant unbelief in the West, we find that God oftentimes uses hard-hearted societies, in this case Islam, to chasten us. And to use, I think that what about the concept of Islam being used by God as a tool of chastening against us, the unbelieving West, and specifically more of the Christian society too?
Well, you know, I don't want to be presumptuous, and I certainly can't speak for God myself. I can give you, however, precedent that's biblical from the book of Habakkuk, in the last prophetic books in the Old Testament. God says, I am bringing the Babylonians, a wicked and hasty nation, against the people of Israel because of their sins. And he's not saying the Babylonians are morally superior. He actually says the opposite. And he is using them, however, as a scourge to purify his people. Now, I think of that often nowadays, and I do think that something like that may be in the offing. Like I say, I don't mean to be presumptuous, and I'm certainly not saying anything for sure, but there are precedents for this kind of thing happening, certainly, in the Scriptures.
Talking to Robert Spencer, he is an author and a speaker and someone that has really put his life on the line for this clash of civilizations that we are experiencing. We're going to be talking about more on the other side of the break, because it's not just terrorism that should catch your attention. It is something as insidious, which is migration without assimilation, the python swallowing its prey, as has been well said, with a long and slow digestion. Robert Spencer is an expert on the subject, reliable not only in what he says about Islam, but how he correctly communicates the Christian worldview. He's director of Jihad Watch. It's a program of the David Horowitz Freedom Center, and he's the author of 14 books on Islam, as well as jihad. He has led seminars on Islam and jihad for the FBI, the Joint Terrorism Task Force, the United States Central Command, and other intelligence and military groups. He knows whereof he speaks. And again, this is a subject you take on at your own peril. And no one knows that better than Robert Spencer, and we deeply appreciate him at the Christian Research Institute. We have scoured his books and found him to be a reliable author. The two books available for your gift, the very user-friendly Politically Incorrect Guide to Islam and the Crusades, as well as The Complete Infidel's Guide to the Quran. You can get either one of them for your gift. Check it out on the web, equip.org, or simply write me at P.O. Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. And of course, our resource consultant standing by, 888-7000. And the letters, C.R.I. Remember, at the Christian Research Institute, we do what we do because life and truth matters. This is not just about an intellectual head fake. This is about experiencing the living, resurrected Christ He is real. He's more real than the flesh upon your bones, and he can transform your life, not only now, but for all eternity. We'll be back in just a few moments with more of Robert Spencer. So please don't touch that dial. In the meantime, go to the web, equip.org, check out his books.
Everything, well, almost everything you know about Islam and the Crusades is wrong, because most textbooks and popular history books are written by left-wing academics and Islamic apologists who justify their contemporary political agendas with contrived historical facts. Learn the truth in Robert Spencer's Politically Incorrect Guide to Islam and the Crusades and The Complete Infidel's Guide to the Quran. To receive your copy of either book as our thank you for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org, equip.org. Hank Hanegraaff will be back right after this. The Complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition, Revised and Updated, is a comprehensive collection of the most often asked as well as most difficult questions Hank Hanegraaff has received in nearly three decades of hosting the Bible Answer Man broadcast. This expanded edition contains new entries, leading readers to a better understanding of God and our relationship to Him in Jesus Christ. The Complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition, Revised and Updated, is a comprehensive, handy, and attractive volume that you will return to again and again. Take your exploration of God's Word to new heights and receive the Revised and Updated Complete Bible Answer Book as our thank you for your gift by calling 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Abroad and at home, Islamic jihadists boldly assault innocent people on the streets, as we saw in Paris and San Bernardino. Capitals around the world brace themselves for increasing attacks by suicidal terrorists willing to blow up themselves and others in the name of Allah, while even many Christians embrace the politically correct folly that Islam is a religion of peace. As a way of addressing this spiritual warfare against the kingdom of Christ, CRI is boosting our apologist arsenal with two new resources by Robert Spencer, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Islam and the Crusades, as well as The Complete Infidel's Guide to the Quran. To receive either of Spencer's books as our thank you for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, or visit equip.org, equip.org. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. Here's what's in the latest issue of the Christian Research Journal. Mothers are uniquely positioned to influence their children's intellectual formation profoundly. When they themselves become dedicated learners, mothers are better prepared to initiate spontaneous conversations that will inspire their children to think more deeply about Christianity. In the cover article, Motherhood and the Life of the Mind, Melissa Kane Travis maps out a strategy to make this goal attainable. Other topics include When Baby Making Takes Three, You, Me, and She, Quentin Tarantino's Postmodern Theology, and much more. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today by calling 888-7000-CRI or subscribe online at equip.org. President Obama quoted from the Quran, "Whoever kills an innocent, it is as if he has killed all mankind, and whoever saves a person, it is as if he has saved all mankind." Now, that sounds compassionate and peaceful, but Obama simply ignored the very next verse, which mandates punishment for anyone whom Muslims do not regard as innocent. Find out how Islam and the Quran are being whitewashed by political leaders and pundits in Robert Spencer's The Complete Infidel's Guide to the Quran or The Politically Incorrect Guide to Islam and the Crusades.
Receive either book as our thanks for your gift simply by calling 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit equip.org, equip.org. And now, let's rejoin your host, Hank Hanegraaff.
You're listening to a special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast today. My guest, Robert Spencer, director of Jihad Watch, is also the author of 14 books on Islam and Jihad, and has led seminars on Islam for all kinds of prestigious organizations, including the FBI. And the two books that we have available for your gift, you can get either one, check it out on the web at equip.org. They're titled The Politically Incorrect Guide to Islam and the Crusades and The Complete Infidel's Guide to the Quran. Again, check it out on the web, equip.org, or simply write me at Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. And remember, our resource consultants, they're standing by, 888-7000. And the letter CRI. Robert, I want to spend just a little time talking about The Complete Infidel's Guide to the Quran. I think that many people sort of think about the Quran as having some kind of an equivalency with Scripture, but in reality, it is replete with faulty ethics.
Yes, absolutely. The Quran is very different from the Bible in pretty much every way. And in terms of ethics, it is sharply different from the Bible. For example, it says in chapter 2, verse 194, that if somebody wrongs you, then you do the same thing to him, which is sort of just the opposite of to love your enemies and turn the other cheek. When the Islamic State, or ISIS, they burned alive a Jordanian pilot last year, the whole world was horrified, but they were just doing that because he had dropped incendiary bombs on their territories. So they were following the Quran, which says do the same evil thing that somebody did to you, you do it back to them. Then they burned him to death. And this is just one aspect. Of course, then there's no idea of marriage as being signifying Christ in the church, as St. Paul explains in Ephesians, but rather the idea of polygamy and even of sex slavery of infidel women. It's all in the Quran. And it's very, very vastly different from the spirit of the Bible.
Yeah, the God of the Bible says, you shall not murder. In stark contrast, the Quranic law commands murder. In fact, Islamic terrorist attacks are directly mandated by Allah, who spoke to Muslim devotees in saying, when you meet the unbelievers in fight, smite at their necks.
Yes, and that's why we see these beheadings that the Islamic State so lovingly videos and puts out. They are showing the Islamic world that they are in adherence with the Quran, that they are doing what the Quran says. And that's why they publicize these things.
You mention ISIS or ISIL or the Islamic State. Might be good to distinguish between those monikers, but Wahhabism, how close are the two in terms of the core values that they hold? Talk about the core comparison between the Islamic State and Wahhabism.
Wahhabism is the official religion of Saudi Arabia. It's actually a reform movement. People often say that we need to reform in Islam. We need to change. We need to see a kind of reformation that will change these violent teachings. The problem is there's already been reform in Islam, and that was Wahhabism. Muhammad ibn Abdul Wahhab died in 1792, and he lived in Arabia, and he taught that innovation was bad, which is actually that's common teaching in Islam, that Islam is perfect and was perfected in the time of Muhammad and needs no reform or change. And so any new change, innovation, bid'ah, it's bad in itself. And so Wahhab said there had been a lot of innovation, and he was going to sweep it away. It's the classic reformist impulse. He's going to get back to the basics and find out exactly what the Quran teaches and just do that. Now, because the Quran teaches violence and hatred and warfare, he ended up creating a form of Islam that was even more virulent and violent than the forms that existed in the world at that time. And so Saudi Arabia being a Wahhabi state, has propagated this violent and virulent form of Islam, Wahhabism, all around the world. The Islamic State is sort of its child in the sense that it teaches exactly the same thing. So you ask about what's the difference between the two. There really isn't any in terms of what they teach. It's, as a matter of fact, the Islamic State is a manifestation of the teachings that the Saudis have been spreading all around the world for so many years.
Thinking about the quote by C.S. Lewis when he said it is the simple religions that are the made-up religions. And you think about the God of Christianity, who is on the one hand ineffable, on the other hand eminent. We cannot know him in his essence, but he has condescended to reveal himself to us. What you have in Islam is a God who simply is a very small God. He becomes comprehensible as opposed to the incomprehensible God of Christianity.
Yes, small and capricious. The God of the Quran says, the Jews say Allah's hand is chained, and Allah's hand is not chained. Now, if you consider the implications of that, what does it mean that his hand is not chained? Well, one of the things that distinguishes Islam from Christianity is that the modern way of thinking and the scientific worldview actually arises from Christianity, and many people don't realize this, but it was because the Christians in Europe believed in the Middle Ages that God was good and thus consistent, and he had created the universe according to consistent and observable laws, whereas in Islam, his hand is not chained, which means he can do whatever he wants. There's no reason to study the universe, study the heavens, study the nature of reality, because Allah could change it tomorrow, and so it doesn't make any difference. And so this is actually, while they claim that this makes for a larger God, one that's not bound by anything, in fact, it makes for one that is smaller, small, capricious, petty, and ultimately rather horrible in the ways that I described before, in just deciding on total caprice to fill hell with human beings.
Let's go back to the Quran for a moment. The Bible is a majestic literary tapestry. It's arranged with desirable coherence, decipherable chronology. It has discernible context. By comparison, the Quranic arrangement is discombobulated, disjointed, disorganized. In fact, Robert Spencer himself says, and I quote, my guest, he says, for a book that provokes so many charges that readers are taking it out of context, the Quran is remarkably decontextualized. Explain that.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Of course, I'm saying what I said was true, so pardon me on that. But it is true. The Quran is not arranged chronologically. It's not, you don't have anything like it, anything in it corresponding to the great histories that are in the Old Testament. In the first place, the Pentateuch, and then, of course, Samuel and Kings. You don't have anything like that, where it moves by a definite historical progression. It flits from one topic to another with no discernible sense of order. It's not arranged thematically. It's not arranged by subject. The only arrangement that it has, and even this is kind of a loose arrangement, is that the chapters are arranged after the first one, roughly from the longest to the shortest. And so it's like reading a sort of a free association document where all number of anything might arise out of anything else. Also, it's as if you are speaking to a couple of strangers. You walk up to a couple of strangers, and they're talking about something that happened that they both had to do with, but you were not involved in it. And they don't bother to stop and fill you in. Then you won't have any idea what's going on. And that's like reading the Quran, because many, many times Allah refers to incidents in Muhammad's life or in the life of the early Muslims and doesn't bother to fill it in, because he obviously they figure that everybody knows. The people who are hearing in the time of Muhammad, they probably participated in it, so they don't need to have it all filled in. But we don't have any idea what's being referred to. And you have to go to the Hadith, the Islamic tradition, in order to get the stories filled in and understand what exactly is being talked about. And so the Quran is very hard to read, and a lot of English-speaking readers don't understand this because they figure, well, it's got to be accessible to some degree, but you really can't read it on its own. That's one of the main reasons why I wrote The Complete Infidel's Guide to the Quran, because most of the time, what's written in the Quran is just going to fly by Western readers, and they won't really understand the implications of what's being said.
Years ago, when the Gospel of Judas was in the news, I was hearing about how eloquent it was and how profound it was. And so I sat down and read the 13 papyrus pages and ended up in a belly laugh because it was so absurd. And I think in much the same way, the elegance of the Quran is grossly exaggerated.
Very much so, Hank. It's, you know, it's always dinned into our ears, and we constantly hear about how it's a monument of Arabic literature, indeed the first monument of Arabic literature, which is certainly true, and that it has an unusual eloquence and an unusual poetic power. Now, of course, people who don't know Arabic are not going to know the spellbinding poetic power of it, and there's no doubt. It has a lot of internal rhymes, a lot of rhythm to it, and so it can be, in sort of an eerie sense, compelling. At the same time, the meaning of it is completely clear in terms of being able to be translated, and people can read that. And when they read that, you're not going to find monuments of wisdom. A few years back, Pope Benedict XVI got in quite a lot of trouble, and there were international riots when he quoted a 14th century Byzantine emperor, Manuel II Palaiologos, who said that there was nothing new in what Muhammad brought except what was evil and inhumane. And this was considered to be this terrible thing that the Pope had quoted this and so on. But the reality is, it was absolutely true. There is anything that is compassionate, anything that is wise, anything that is something that is insightful, that is in the Quran, is generally borrowed from Judaism or Christianity. Anything that's new is about warfare and violence and hatred. And so it's true. There's nothing new in the Quran except what is evil and inhumane. Those things that are that are not evil and inhumane are generally borrowed.
Robert, we deeply appreciate your time and your expertise. Thanks so much for joining us on the Bible Instrument broadcast.
Always a pleasure, Hank. Thank you.
Robert Spencer, he's the director of Jihad Watch, the author of 14 books on Islam, and the two that we're featuring. You can get either one for your gift, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Islam and the Crusades, as well as The Complete Infidel's Guide to the Quran. You can check it out on the web at equip.org or write me at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. As always, our resource consultant standing by, 888-7000. And the letter CRI. Remember, Monday through Friday at this time, your questions answered live when you dial 888-ASK-HANK, numerically 888-275-4265. We do what we do because life and truth matter. We thank you for standing shoulder to shoulder with this one-of-a-kind ministry in the battle for life and truth. So long for now.
Thank you for joining us today. Our mission at the Christian Research Institute is to equip Christians to think and to live Christianly. To make a gift that can transform lives, and as our thanks, receive Robert Spencer's The Complete Infidel's Guide to the Quran or The Politically Incorrect Guide to Islam and the Crusades, simply by calling 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28271, or just visit us online at equip.org. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter. With over 500,000 copies in print, Hank Hanegraaff's Bible Answer books were born out of his many years of hosting the Bible Answer Man broadcast. He's taken his on-air answers to questions and chiseled them until only the gems emerge. Questions involving biblical interpretation, cults, science, ethics, apparent contradictions, and much more. This remarkable collection of concise answers is now even better. My goal, says Hank, is to take the complex and make it simple and memorable.
Receive your copy of the complete Bible Answer Book Collector's Edition, revised and updated, as our thank you for your gift by calling 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. That's equip.org.
Bet your teachers never told you, Muhammad did not teach peace and tolerance, but led armies and ordered the assassination of his enemies. The Crusades were not acts of unprovoked aggression by Europe against the Islamic world, but a delayed response to centuries of Muslim aggression. And what is known today as the Islamic world was created by a series of brutal conquests of non-Muslim lands. That's why the Christian Research Institute has added to its apologist arsenal two timely and thoroughly researched books on Islam by Robert Spencer. To receive your copy of The Complete Infidel's Guide to the Quran or The Politically Incorrect Guide to Islam and the Crusades as our thanks for your gift, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches or visit equip.org. Equip.org.